I'm Elsa Levasseur, and I'm a sustaining member, and I give monthly on the internet. It's so easy to listen to WGXC Accra.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509. WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the McPees of East Hampton, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, April 12th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Jamel Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that the Chatham School District Board of Education is proposing a $34,372,292 budget for the 2023-2024 school year, with a 1.98% school tax increase for voters to consider in May. The budget spends $754,191 more than last year, a 2.23% increase. The proposed budget eliminates one kindergarten teaching position, the school says, because of decreased enrollment. And they are also cutting one vendor that provides part-time speech pathologist services. But the proposed budget adds a full-time speech pathologist position at the elementary school, a kindergarten through fifth grade literacy coach position, and more support for academic intervention services at Chatham Middle School. Voters will decide on the budget from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on May 16th at the Mary E. Dardis Elementary School gym. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Congressperson Elise Stefanik is starting a, quote, battleground fund, unquote, to help elect more congressional Republicans in New York. This seems like the answer to the announcement in February of a Democrat-controlled super PAC pledging to raise and spend $45 million to get more Democrats elected to Congress from New York. Republicans currently control the House with a five-member majority after flipping four seats in New York last year that had been held by Democrats. Stefanik is attempting to fund get-out-the-vote efforts with her battleground fund. First-term Republican Representative Mark Molinaro is expected to be among the targets of the Democratic opposition campaign. Molinaro said, quote, "Elise is an incredible fundraiser and knows what it takes to win. We are proud to have her as the leader of our delegation," unquote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that State Senator Michelle Hinchey isn't ruling out running for the 19th congressional district seat now held by Republican Mark Molinaro. Hinchey is a Saugerties-based Democrat whose late father, Maurice Hinchey, represented much of what is now the 19th district during his 20-year congressional career. In an email on April 11th, Hinchey said, quote, "The outpouring of support and encouragement to run for the 19th congressional district has been incredible. As a young woman watching what's happening in our country today, I am currently considering the best way that I can keep helping people and improving our region," unquote. And she was first elected to the state Senate in 2020. So far, Josh Riley, the Democrat who lost to Molinaro in 2022, and Daniel Butterman of Oneonta have announced they are running in the 19th congressional district in 2024. Molinaro's position on abortion was an issue in the last election, and after a recent court ruling from Texas, may again be in the 2024 campaign, so Hinchey could have an advantage over the other Democrats who have announced so far. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. News 10 reports that several local drive-in movie theaters open this weekend and next. Coxsackie's Highway Drive-In on Route 9 in Coxsackie opens this weekend with Renfield, Cocaine Bear, Super Mario Brothers, and other films. There are also drive-ins in Palatine Bridge and Glenmont opening April 14th. The following week, drive-ins in Malta, Avril Park, and Brattleboro resume screenings, while Greenville's drive-in doesn't restart until June 30th. Read the full story on the News 10 website. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, April 12th. Local early morning temperatures range from 54 degrees in Tannersville to 66 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 49 degrees. Pollen levels are medium high, but let's just call it high for the rest of the week. Today will be another nice spring day with a high of 77 at 3 p.m. About that time, the windy day turns gusty for a little bit. Then, overnight, winds calm way down and we hit a low temperature of 54. Tomorrow will be warm and sunny, hitting 85 at 3 p.m. Overnight drops to 56 degrees, and Friday afternoon we see 85 degrees. Saturday still looks like it has a moist afternoon with a high of 78. Then, rain overnight. A heads up for early next week, it appears to cool off, get rainy, and be a literal pain for arthritis sufferers. Today's river temperature will be 45.14 degrees, and tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:18 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is picking up pace a little bit, with sunspot 3272 coming into view and giving us a 10% chance of X-class flares today. Solar wind speed is currently 366.9 kilometers per second at 2.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 30 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1.3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 103, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
This is deprogramming from the Universal Media Network.
Stuck a pin in your backbone, spoke you down from there. All I ever wanted was to be your spine. Lost your friction and you slid for a mile. Overdone, overdrive, overlive, override. You're not the one who let me down, but thanks for offering. It's not a voice and I'm not around. Thanks for picking it. I got a magnet in my head, extra thick.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
There is no excuse for these kinds of documents to be in the public domain. They don't deserve to be in the public domain. They deserve to be protected.
White House National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby says the Justice Department and the Pentagon are investigating a major leak of classified documents exposing U.S. intelligence gathering. He says officials are still unsure if the leak is contained. The documents include materials concerning Ukraine's military readiness, as well as U.S. espionage efforts in Russia and other countries. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee says he will sign an executive order to strengthen background checks for purchasing weapons following the recent deadly shooting at a Nashville school.
It's been a very emotionally charged couple of weeks, but we have to stay focused on the path forward. Tennesseans are depending on us.
Lawmakers have already passed school safety legislation putting armed guards in Tennessee schools. Lee is calling for an order of protection law to keep guns away from people who are a threat to themselves or others. President Joe Biden has signed a resolution formally ending the coronavirus national emergency enacted in March of 2020. Five states have already started to remove people from Medicaid, which was expanded during the pandemic. Avanel Joseph of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation says many people who remain eligible for coverage could slip through the cracks.
People who are currently enrolled in Medicaid, less than 25% know that changes are coming. Even fewer than that are getting help to figure out what their options are.
Medicaid is the largest public health insurance program for Americans with low and no income. One in five people are enrolled. The Justice Department is providing the Senate Intelligence Committee access to documents found in the private homes of President Biden, former President Donald Trump, and former Vice President Mike Pence. Senator Marco Rubio says lawmakers have considered withholding funding until all the documents are handed over.
I'm not in the threat business right now, but we certainly are. There are things we need to do as a committee every year to authorize the moving around of funds. I think the Director of National Intelligence and other heads of intelligence agencies are aware of that.
Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has filed a federal lawsuit against Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, accusing him of working to intimidate Bragg by probing his prosecution of former President Trump. Bragg is asking a judge to invalidate subpoenas Jordan plans to issue as part of his investigation. Democrats have chosen Chicago to host their 2024 national convention. The pro-union city beat out Atlanta and New York as President Biden works to secure the organized labor vote prior to the 2024 presidential race. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have positive news from Arizona, where Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed 3 anti-voter bills last week, passed by a legislature bent on making voting harder for its citizens and its election workers. Voting Rights Lab reports that over 80 election-related bills were filed this session after a past year of conspiracy theories and chaos in counties around Arizona. Last Monday, Governor Katie Hobbs, who won a bruising campaign over election denier Carrie Lake last year, vetoed SB 1074, which would have required ballot tabulating machines to be made entirely of U.S. components. Testimony on the bill indicated that no such replacement machine exists, meaning elections would have to be hand-counted, a slower, less accurate, and more expensive method. Hobbs also vetoed HB 2415, which would have purged registered voters from a semi-permanent vote-by-mail list after just one election cycle if they didn't vote. Currently, non-voting registered voters are removed from the list after 2 cycles. Signature matching is notoriously inaccurate, particularly for elderly and disabled voters. HB 2322, a bill which would have codified signature verification already in practice under Arizona's election guidelines, was also vetoed by Hobbs. Governor Hobbs said in one veto statement, "I stand ready to sign bills that make voting more accessible, accurate, and secure." We have links to articles and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. My name is Amanda. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Amanda.
We are going to talk about what's playing in the theaters in the area of WGXC's reach right now. I'm going to start off with the Wyndham Theater, which is in Wyndham, New York. We have the Super Mario Brothers movie, the new one, not the Bob Hoskins one.
A shame.
We have John Wick 4, and we have Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. You can find out more about showtimes at WyndhamTheater.com. That's WyndhamTheater.com.
And now I'm going to tell you what's playing at the Crandall Theater over in Chatham. We have Carole King, Home Again, live at Central Park, Creed 3, Happy Feet, No Bears, Return to Soul, The Lost King, The Lorax, Mary Cassatt Painting the Modern Woman, 2040, A Good Person, 1001, and the Farm Film Festival. And you can find more information about these showtimes at crandalltheater.org.
Amazing. I'm going to tell you, sweet listeners, about what is playing at the Spotlight Cinema in Hudson, New York, otherwise known as the 8 Screen Theater on Fairview Avenue next to Tractor Supply. Jenny, we have a Jesus movie. We have a movie called His Only Son.
It's his season.
His Only Son, Air, Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves, Super Mario Brothers movie, John Wick Chapter 4, Shazam, Fury of the Gods, Cocaine Bear, and Scream, the new Scream, Scream 5. That is everything that's playing this week at the Spotlight Cinemas. There's also a little pop-up on their website that says, please join us on May 18th for the premiere showing of Fast X. And get your tickets ahead of time.
Oh, wow.
And they also have $5 Tuesdays at this theater. You can find out more about all of that at spotlightcinemas.com.
I'm a big fan of the $5 Tuesday.
Oh, who doesn't love a good deal?
Delightful.
Who doesn't love a good deal?
All right. Now I'm going to tell you what's playing at the Upstate Cinemas, starting with the location in Rhinebeck, otherwise known as the Star Cinema. We have Close Up, Showing Up with director Kelly Reichardt. Close Up, 32 Seconds. True Stories, Little Richard, I Am Everything, Forward Number 2, How to Blow Up a Pipeline, Geographies of Solitude, Concert for George, and What the Hell Happened to Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And now I'm going to tell you what's playing at the Orpheum Theater, which is the Upstate Cinema in Saugerties. We have, live from Upstate, Murmur, R-E-M, Membered. It's the word remembered, but the R-E-M is like R-E-M, the band. Paint, The Great Gatsby, a live radio play, exclamation point. Little Richard, I Am Everything. The Secret Life of Plants. What the Hell Happened to Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Carole King, live from Central Park. The Last Waltz. Watt Stacks. And Prince, Sign of the Times. And you can find these specific showtimes at upstatefilms.org.
A lot of those concert movies or music movies are happening because they just installed a really new amazing sound system in both Upstate Cinemas. So they're doing a whole series that focuses on music movies.
So oh, that's so cool.
I'm excited to see True Stories.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Wouldn't mind going to see Sign of the Times either.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to tell you about what's playing at TSL, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited, here in Hudson, New York. There's a lot playing there at all times, so we encourage you to go to their website to look at the whole calendar. But this week, we have playing Little Richard, I Am Everything. Nam June Paik, Moon is the Oldest TV. Gods of Mexico. Shepherd and Dark. Pacification, Darren Aronofsky's Pie. Oh, that's right. That also just got a restoration. I've never seen it, even though like I was in high school at the time, yeah, when everyone was obsessed with Pie.
I saw it in college.
Rewind and Play, Juniper. And that is what we have for this week. But again, their calendar is very extensive. So please head over to timeandspace.org. to check out more about what is playing this month at TSL in Hudson.
Wow. It's the beginning of the blockbuster season, kind of. Summer's coming for us.
I feel it.
It's coming down the pike. We're going to have some great flicks coming our way.
It's all happening.
The plants are blooming. The sun is shining. Hello, Fast bang. X is playing soon.
It's so exciting.
Can you believe it?
I really want to see Gods of Mexico, too.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Looks great.
Yeah. There's a lot of great movies out.
I know.
They just never stop.
I know.
As we say every time.
I wish they would stop just to let me catch up, but it's okay. I'm also glad
Give
that
me a
they
break.
Keep going.
Thank you.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Last Friday, April 7th, a Texas federal judge reversed the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's approval of mifepristone, potentially blocking access to the abortion medication across the country. In response, a U.S. district judge in Washington state issued a ruling barring the FDA from pulling mifepristone off the market. These conflicting decisions will likely bring the issue to the Supreme Court. And to help us understand what this all means, I'm now joined by Shelley Hegan, president and CEO of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Let's begin by talking about what mifepristone is, as well as the drug that it's typically used in combination with, misoprostol.
Sure. So mifepristone is a drug used in combination with misoprostol for a medication abortion. And it has been used in Europe for many years. And in 2000, the FDA approved the use of that medication for patients in the United States. It is widely available, and it right now, medication abortion accounts for more than 50% of the abortions in the country. Here at Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, it accounts for more than 60% of our abortions. And it makes the process relatively comfortable for the patient. Now, there's still cramping and bleeding involved in a medication abortion. But what bringing mifepristone to the market did was it moved us away from a previous drug regime that was a single drug regime using just misoprostol. So with MIFI, just for by way of terms, in medicine, we generally refer to it as MIFI, and we refer to misoprostol as MISO. So if I say those, that's what I'm talking about. So we use MIFI at the time of the abortion, in consultation with a provider, the person who identifies that they'd like to terminate their pregnancy, takes the mifepristone, and then 24 hours later takes the misoprostol, which it makes the uterus contract and expel the products of conception. So without the availability of MIFI, we have to go back to that previous protocol, which was three separate steps of four pills each time. It's a lot more complicated for someone to do, and they're almost always doing this at home. So they're kind of by themselves, and they don't have somebody immediately there. Certainly, we have like call numbers and all kinds of support, but it still is a little bit confusing sometimes for patients. It also can cause more cramping and more bleeding. It can also cause nausea and maybe a fever. In general, you feel kind of crappy. Whereas with mifepristone, it's much more comfortable for the patient. And sadly, taking that off the market really just is, to me, one more piece of evidence that it isn't the patients that we care about when it comes to abortion and the government making rules about it. There's really no regard for the fact that women and people who are experiencing abortion are worthy of our respect, and they should have the most comfortable procedure possible.
The lawsuit says that mifepristone is unsafe and that the FDA didn't study it closely enough before approving its use. You mentioned that it's been around and in use since 2000 or approved in the U.S. And in your professional opinion, how safe is it?
It's incredibly safe. It is 99% effective. It has a 1% complication rate. I've seen different medical people saying things like it's safer than Tylenol, it's safer than Viagra. You know, in the medical community, they don't really compare drugs like that. You don't compare like aspirin to Tums, you know, like they're just different. But you know, you compare it to what the outcome without the drug would be. So the difference between the 1% complication rate with MIFI and childbirth and delivery, which has much higher, between 2 and 6% complication rates, it is clearly the safer alternative for someone seeking an abortion.
So what does this ruling mean for Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood patients and other people in New York who seek abortion access?
Well, I have to say, everything I'm going to say is our best thinking at this moment in time, which is like midday on Tuesday, April 11th. That's like the best we can do. So right now, what that means for patients in New York, specifically our patients, is that there will be no immediate change at all to the medication abortion process. We are anticipating a stay coming out of either the appellate court or possibly the Supreme Court. Well, there's more time to really review what an appeal to this ruling might look like. That being said, should it be pulled from the market, we are not sure at this moment if that means that we can no longer use the drug or just no longer purchase the drug. So we do have, we have the supplies here at Upper Hudson that we've always had and that we put in place to plan for this possibility. So we don't see an immediate change happening. But that could change at any given time. And I think that answer, just me having to answer you in that sort of roundabout way, that's the real moment we're in, right? Like, there should not be this level of confusion and chaos in terms of using a highly reliable, very safe medication that came to the market over two decades ago and has been used throughout most of the world for more than three decades. That's not the place we should be in. And the confusion is completely unnecessary, and it is 100% politically and religiously motivated.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has a rigorous process for approving drugs, food, vaccines, cosmetics, etc. So how does this ruling jeopardize safety regulations for other drugs and products that are necessary for the health of all people?
Well, you know, I think that's a really fantastic question. And I think that's the one that is really being asked across the country right now, that does this ruling just go too far in trying to dismantle what is really one of the strongest administrative bodies in our government? Like, the Food and Drug Administration keeps us all safe. You know, we can trust that the package of food you buy in the grocery store is safe to eat. You can trust that the bottle of pills you open are safe to use. Our doctors know that the drugs they're prescribing are safe for their patients based on the years and years and years of work by the FDA. So dismantling that really fantastic system that we have in this country would be a shame and would have repercussions that we really can't quite tell what they might be right now.
Hmm. Shelley Hegan, CEO of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, thank you so much for joining us. What else should listeners know about this ruling?
I think it's important for everybody to be paying attention. I think it's important that here in New York, we are getting ready to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, which will really codify access to abortion in New York State and protect us from some of the whims of whatever is going on in the rest of the country. I think as it relates to medication abortion, patients who are seeking a medication abortion should know that they still can get one. And that if you are seeking the care you need, please call us, make an appointment on our website, and we will be able to take care of you. And we will do our darndest to make sure that that's uninterrupted.
Thank you so much for sharing this information with us.
Thank you.
This has been Sina Bazila Hickey reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
We're joined today by Michael Richardson, who is with Rivers and Mountains Green Faith, and along with quite a few other groups like Citizen Action. They recently on Saturday held a protest out in front of the office of D.D. Barrett, Assemblymember Barrett, who is chair of the Assembly Energy Committee. And the focus of the protest was some legislation that the Assemblywoman is the lead sponsor on, but seems to be pushed by the governor, that really would have thrown a monkey wrench into what the state was doing in terms of trying to reduce emissions. So, Michael, can you tell me explain a little bit to our listeners what prompted this demonstration? I understand maybe 50, 60 people showed up on a Saturday morning?
Yes, Mark. We were very pleased that here on a Saturday morning, the day before many people were breaking for Easter or Passover, we had 60 climate activists. Now, this included a large number of constituents, as well as some state and local climate leaders. We got together in the noontime hour, right outside the Hudson office of Assemblymember Dee Dee Barrett, specifically, as you said, to protest her introduction of the bill that we call the A6039, or in the Senate, S6030, that would severely undermine our New York State Climate Act.
Now, what were some of the things that would have, changed or might change, since this bill might come up later in the session? What were some of the concerns with the legislation?
Well, there are two parts to the, let's call it, amendment to the Climate Act. One deals very directly with what's called the methane accounting method or system. It's a little wonky there, but we'll explain that here in a moment. And the other part had to do with the inclusion of biofuels and biomass into the overall methane system itself, to include that or not to include that in the amount of methane that's being put into the atmosphere.
So, of course, many people are aware that the state, spent three and a half years right in what they call a climate scoping plan in order to guide both lawmakers and state agencies on how we're going to try to meet the goals set out by the state's new climate law, CLCPA. At the last moment, basically, the governor seemed to be jettisoning a number of the recommendations that council had been making. And of course, it was a firestorm of protest. The governor did eventually back off and say, well, we're not going to do it in the budget. But how did scientists sort of react to what the governor and I guess Assemblymember Barrett was doing?
Well, I think you could say betrayed would be a good word to put behind that. Mark, I think you can go back more than 3 years. You can go back to the actual formation of the Climate Act, the process that went through there. The accounting system for determining how much methane is in the atmosphere is a benchmark that is very, very critical for the purposes of obtaining your goals, as you understand, that if we want to be at 50% of name your goal or 70% of name your goal, you have to define what that goal is. And so the scientists and the climate environmental activists, along with the industry itself, debated all the way through the process of the Climate Act and then the CAC scoping plan. So let's call that 5 years of what that goal or that standard should be. And they came up with the 20-year standard opposed to the 100-year standard. Now, I don't want to get into the wonkiness here in a few minutes that we have, but figure it this way, that if I go from a 20-year standard, how much methane I'm allowing into the atmosphere, it's measured, as you know, in tonnage and other degrees, and I want to move that out to 100 years, well, very simply said, it dilutes your math by magnitudes. And so it allows the fossil fuel industry to literally put more methane into the atmosphere in the short term and the long term. So here you have scientists, climate activists, environmentalists, all discussing this for 3, 4, 5 years. And then here one day in late March, before the budget is due, a group of politicians suddenly decide they're wrong. We shouldn't be using this standard. Now, I don't know of one scientist, maybe you do, I don't know of any economist who knocked on the door of Hochul or any of these legislators and said, "Oh, hold on. We got a problem here. We got something wrong, and we have to fix it right away." Not one piece of evidence is there. The only evidence that we find, the only fingerprints that we find on the weapon here, are lobbyists. And along with that, we find a check in the terms of $480,000 in donations from utility and fossil fuel executives and lobbies that were applied to the Hochul administration.
Now, we've been talking a lot about, Governor Hochul and some of her somewhat unusual behavior, especially since the Environmental Bond Act, which is on the ballot last November, did quite a bit better among voters than her own policies did. So if anything, one would have thought she would have gotten the message that the environment and the climate is a concern to voters. But what's motivating Assemblymember Barrett, or what's her explanation for what's going on?
Well, here again, I think we just have to go back and look at the flow of things here, if you will. That I myself was lobbying in the Barrett office on behalf of NYPIRG on Wednesday, a long week ago, on the Climate Superfund Act and the All Electric Buildings Act. And on that Wednesday, there was no mention whatsoever of this amendment to the Climate Act. Now, on March 27th, it was, I believe, a Tuesday, Senate Energy Committee Chairman Kevin Parker introduced his version, S-6030. Now, it seems that this came from the governor's office. It did not come through the Senate majority leadership. Oh, by the way, the leader and the majority leader, or excuse me, the speaker and the majority leader are both supportive of leaving the Climate Act the way it is. But yeah, back to the point is that Parker introduced this, and there's evidence that it was pushed by the governor's office. And this was reported in the New Republic here just last week. And that was a push to change the way New York counts emissions of methane. And then a few days later, on March 31st, being a Friday, Assembly Energy Committee Chair Dee Dee Barrett introduces her twin bill, A-6039. So it seems to us that what happened here is that the lobbyist went to Hochul. They called in their chips. Hochul contacts Parker. Hochul contacts Hasty. Hasty contacts Barrett. And here, in a last minute, with no input, we have an amendment, a very, very serious amendment to our Climate Act.
So we have about 90 seconds left. So the budget allegedly will be adopted sometime in the next few weeks. The governor says she's not going to push this change in the budget, but she has not removed the possibility of doing it post-budget. And Assemblymember Barrett seemed to dig in her heels after the governor released, you know, a statement that she was not doing the budget. So in the next 60 seconds, what's our next steps with respect to this and other climate issues?
Well, I think we have to put the spotlight on. Now, clearly, the Parker-Barrett bill blatantly shut out stakeholders and lacked any transparency. So now that we have this opportunity here in the coming weeks as we go into the regular legislative session outside of budget, we need to get in there and turn on the lights and show that there's no mathematical reason or scientific reason for amending the Climate Act as they're trying to do. That this is solely being driven by profits and greed by the fossil fuel industry.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Michael Richardson of River and Mountains Green Faith. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hit it, 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 h
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. More than 60 local residents protested outside of Assembly member Dede Barrett's office in Hudson on April 8th because of her sponsorship of legislation that would undercut the state's effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Michael Richardson of River and Mountains Green Faith, one of the organizers of the protests, spoke on WOOC, saying,
"On a Saturday morning, the day before many people were breaking for Easter or Passover, we had 60 climate activists. Now, this included a large number of constituents, as well as some state and local climate leaders. We got together in the noontime hour right outside the Hudson office of Assemblymember Dede Barrett, specifically to protest her introduction of the bill that we call the A6039, or in the Senate, S6030, that would severely undermine our New York State Climate Act.
The proposal from Governor Kathy Hochul and Barrett would align New York with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and federal government and calculate methane gas emissions over 100 years. But New York Climate Act requires the state review to take place every 20 years, so is more accurate. Barrett voted for that Climate Act, but now argues that her legislation helps consumers by not, and I quote, strapping steep costs on the back of everyday New Yorkers, end quote. Instead, Barrett's plan delays the cost of climate change to future generations. Hochul last week reportedly backed off the proposal in budget negotiations, but until the budget is signed and this year's legislation session is over, the Barrett bill could still get enacted. Roger Hannigan Gilson reports in the Times Union that Democrat Josh Riley announced April 11th that he will try again in 2024 to beat Republican Mark Molinaro to represent the 19th District in Congress. Riley lost by a 1.5 percentage to Molinaro in the 2022 election and was one of the races that flipped the seat, giving the Republicans control of the House of Representatives. Riley is quickly gathering support to ward off other challenges, with chairs of 7 of the 11 county Democrat committees in the 19th district signing a letter of support for his campaign. The 19th Congressional District was previously represented by Democrat Antonio Delgado, who abandoned the job to become Lieutenant Governor. Democrat Pat Ryan then won a special election to hold the seat for a few weeks, but then ran for the 18th. Congressional District after redistricting changed the maps. Molinaro has voted with conservative Republicans in his first month in office. Riley said the difference in returning the same election in 2024 is that Molinaro, and I quote, now has a record to run on, end quote. Daniel Butterman of Oneata also filed to run in the 19th district in February as a Democrat. Molinaro's campaign released a statement in response to Riley's announcement saying, and I quote, "There's nearly 600 days until the 2024 election. I'm focused on delivering bipartisan results for upstate New York. I will run on this record if my opponent is Josh Riley, Daniel Butterman, or someone who has yet to announce," end quote. Riley lives in the 19th congressional district near Binghamton, while Molinaro lives outside the district in Dutchess County. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that on April 10th, the Department of Environmental Conservation began to remove the thousands of tires from green tire recycling on State Route 81 in Climax in Greene County. 9 months ago, the town of Coxsackie asked a judge to shut down the illegally operating tire company. The Department of Environmental Conservation said in a statement on April 10th, and I quote, "DEC will continue to work with the town of Coxsackie to hold the facility's owners and operators responsible," end quote. New York State Supreme Court Justice Richard Mott had authorized the town to charge the cleanup to the owner's property tax bill, but town attorney Tal Replea said the taxpayers will pay instead. Mott first ordered Green Tire Recycling closed on August 30, 2022, but property owner Corey Mergendahl and Sharon Lampman and Green Tire Recycling owner Shane Forster have ignored court orders. On March 10th of this year, Mott held Mergendahl, Lampman, and Forster in contempt of court with a fine of $250 and a judgment of $100. Read the full story in Porcupine Soup. Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that Great Barrington Select Board on April 10th voted 4-1 with member Ed Abrams voting no for a special permit to allow planes to keep taking off from and landing at Walter J. Kolodza Airport. Berkshire Aviation Holding Incorporated, the airport owners, must abide by a slew of conditions, including cutting back their flight school operations during the summer months. Abrams, the lone no vote, said, and I quote, "We missed an opportunity to really listen to various opinions and try to reach compromise. Without a permit, the town controls growth. With it, we are at the mercy of the courts holding our issuing of conditions normally reserved for the FAA and Department of Transportation," end quote. Two neighbors and an abutter have jointly sued the town in land court for allowing the airport to operate, but the judge paused the case until April 29th to wait for the permit hearing result. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 update. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grand. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 74 degrees. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 52 degrees. And on Thursday, sunny with a high near 83 degrees. And Thursday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 57 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
It's Tuesday, April 11, 2023.
Looking at Louisiana now, it can serve as a model for what we can expect to happen in the future.
Scientists find a dramatic abnormal rise in sea levels in the southeast.
Our proposed rule would dramatically reduce the number of people with elevated cancer risk from breathing air toxins.
Biden EPA limits air pollution from chemical and plastics plants. Plus,
there's a bell to left. That's gone. It's out of Tiger Stadium.
Global warming is boosting home runs in Major League Baseball.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Leave my gas stove, my air conditioner, my light bulbs, red meat, SUV, and especially my toilet paper alone.
Hey, Sean Hannity, after lying to your audience for all of these years, don't you find it strange that not a single one of those things has been taken from you? Food for thought. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, never mind that liar, Sean Hannity. What truths do you have to share with us today?
Well, first up, March 2023 was the second warmest March ever recorded since record keeping began in the